The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
When the time has come for moving on, you can't go wrong.
Pointing You Home with Eric Stewart on WMAL.
Pointing You Home.
Now, here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Good morning, DMV. Are you ready for everybody's favorite day of the year? Tax Day?
Say that.
If you missed any shows, look us up on Spotify or iHeartRadio. That's Pointing You Home on Spotify or iHeartRadio. And if you're on your computer, just Google Eric Stewart Group. Go to ericstewartgroup.com. If you want to listen to our shows, you can listen to us anytime you want. Helen Flynn joins me this morning. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning, Eric. Bring in Washington.
Yes, it's so nice to have weather that is warm, blustery at times, a bit rainy, but all in all, beautiful. I love the green at this time of year. So, Helen, I'm glad you could join me on the Pointing You Home show. I want to cover a few upcoming changes in the way transportation is going to be handled on our local park system, possibly. So I don't know if you've heard about this, but Montgomery County is considering allowing e-bikes and scooters on park trails. Okay, so let's consider what that means for our county. If you remember these scooters in Washington, D.C. that sometimes litter the sidewalks, people just leave them there. They're called Bird and something else and so on. And so you basically pay a buck to unlock the scooter. You pay 15 cents for every minute that you're on it. And then you just put it down wherever you get to wherever you're going to go. You just put it down on the ground and somebody else can then find it and pick it up and take it where they want to go. Now, it's a shared traveling system, and it avoids using vehicles, cars, and whatnot. You could use sidewalks. So by using county trails, it's not going to be just for bikes or runners. You might have people riding scooters. What do you think about that?
I think that's the best idea for seniors I've heard yet.
Tell me why you feel that way.
Well, I would love to ride a scooter around Washington, but I don't think that's the smartest thought I have ever had. I think it's very efficient, though, for the young people to get where they're going and to avoid cars jamming up all over the place. And it sounds like a real economical way to do it, and it looks like a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Well, I think it's a great thing, too. I enjoy riding the scooters. They're fun. The e-bikes, which is essentially electronic bikes, they give a little bit of power. I actually used one of those when I was overseas last year, and it was very helpful. I didn't really want to admit it, but I really enjoyed it. Hey, you heard about the Bethesda Bank building. It's called the SunTrust building. It's downtown Bethesda. Been there since, I think, back in the 30s. It's an iconic building. It's now up for sale for $9 million. Apparently SunTrust sold the property for something like, $5 or $6 million back in 2008 and then bought it back. And they now have it up for sale for $9 million. I spoke with someone about that. Bethesda Bank, you all know where it is if you've ever been in Bethesda. Think about the building. SunTrust sold that property for $5.5 million in 2008 and bought it back for $9.36 million back in 2016 and have it up for $9 million now. That's 7500 Wisconsin Avenue. Across from the Air Rights Building area.
Slow down. Baby, now you're moving way too fast.
Have you heard about the jumbo mortgage lending slowdown? Interesting. Yeah, so we have, as a result of the majority of wealthy borrowers were considered safe borrowers, and so there was a big focus by large banks and also investment houses like your Morgan Stanley and your Smith Barney's, which is now combined, of course, and others, to lend money to those who had money and were safe bets. But probably because we have had a tax law change where the taxes you can't write off over $10,000 in your tax bill, we've had an exit from our area, moving to areas where the taxes, the property taxes are lower. Especially this has happened in New York. New York has seen a migration out of, an exodus out of New York to Florida, where, you know, the taxes are lower, cost of living is lower. Unless you live, you know, in Old Town Naples, right on the beach, right? Of course, then you've got probably a $30 or $40 million house of some kind. By the way, so why do you think this is happening, Helen? Do you have any thoughts on why do you think the jumbo market has been slowing?
Well, certainly the tax implications have played a big role, And I think there are other reasons that people are leaving different areas. I was listening to the radio coming in, and places like Seattle, Washington, there's a great migration south. Mm-hmm. There are different socioeconomic reasons that people are leaving particular areas and seeking out other areas. Used to be climate, used to be other reasons that people might move, but I think monetary, too, is not the only one.
Yeah, I think the economy seems to be moderating a little bit. If you look at jumbo lending back in 2016, we saw the highest spike since the Great Recession, since 08. And then it moderated down in 2017, moderated down in 18. It looks like this year it's going to moderate down as well. So the origination of jumbo mortgages, which, by the way, nationally, most areas a jumbo mortgage is anything over $484,000. Locally, it's over mid-700s. So it's fascinating. We'll see what happens. We'll keep a track on it. But if it could be that a lot of folks who did refinance already don't really need to refinance again because rates, you know, were at 3% and they've gone up. They went up as high as 5.25%. Now they've come back down. So we might see some refinancing take place on jumbo mortgages that were originated in the last year. We'll see what happens. Hey, speaking of big homes, Helen, you go into big houses.
I do, and I love it.
Okay, why? Why do you love it?
I have enjoyed going into open houses since I was a kid.
Uh-huh. And
the different, I think it's seeing how the simple folk live, how the other folk live, you know, the Camelot story, mm-hmm. and just seeing the taste that people have for different things, what they highlight in their house, the colors. You can tell a lot about the people that live in a house from the house itself.
This is true. It's always fun to get the personality of a house and then
That's
see
right.
what the person's like.
And then
if you
meet the person, it may be totally different, but it's a great exercise in imagination.
So, you know, in Scottsdale, Arizona, a very popular area for wealthy retirees, there are 349 homes on the market at $3 million as of February 1st, which is an all-time high. All right. Now, the reason we're bringing that up is that we're seeing a lot of really big houses that folks have built, huge homes for displaying their artwork, for displaying cars or whatnot. And the number of buyers who are shying away from large homes and from that responsibility has increased. And as a result, we are in a glut right now, especially in the Sun Belt, apparently. Baby boomers and retirees who build these grand houses across the Sun Belt are now sitting on them and having to sell them for less than what they cost to build them because there isn't that much demand for that much size. What do you think is a good solution to that problem?
I don't have a solution, but it's interesting. I was talking about this in a class that I taught this week, and the thought out there is that millennials and so forth are not looking for the big houses. And the design of the house with the formal living room and dining room. But what I really see in that respect is when they have a family, then they go back to that formal house. And it's more the schools and the location and everything else. And the thought is that they'll remodel when and if they decide to. Mm-hmm. But if we look at the changes in society, we're not going to need three-car garages one of these days.
True.
We're not going to need cable.
True.
So much is changing. I was listening to someone that put in thousands and thousands of dollars to have his house all cable ready.
Mm-hmm.
And now it really doesn't matter.
It
but
doesn't.
He went to the highest expense at that time and
yes.
so many square feet. And mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of change that we're going to see in time.
I would agree with those good observations. Think about 5G. It's just being rolled out now in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. But the speed with which communication will travel through the airwaves mm-hmm. will make cables obsolete. You could still use them. Mm-hmm. It's a direct means of access and information, optical fiber and whatnot. But it is, we are going to see a time where plugging things in, other than for power And maybe even right. at some point, maybe not even that, right? So we'll see a change for that. And because I think our focus was on making individual spaces in the luxury houses. We want this room for this purpose and this room for this purpose. But I think the majority of homeowners, unless you're so wealthy that you can just own these houses and have a staff there all the time, so you just have the luxury of it, the majority of wealthy Americans see the benefit of big houses as maybe not as much of a benefit. And I think from what I've read, there's an estimated 13 to 15 million older Americans who will exit home ownership between 2026 and 2036. I'll be one of those. Mm-hmm. That'll be right there around 70 years of age for me. And I'll be, you know, I'm not necessarily going to want to keep a house forever. We'll see. And with cars, I've been reading recently that the demand for vehicles has been waning, as we move into this type of Uber economy. And so garages may, in fact, become additional room space because the homeowners who don't really want garages anymore because they don't really have cars for that reason, they may decide, hey, let's make another bedroom there. Maybe that becomes an accessory dwelling unit right on the face of a house that has its own separate entrance. First-time millennial home buyers. So we are seeing a trap that many home buyers have fallen into, this never-ending cycle of paying rent. What is the reason? We're curious to find out why millennials are having so much trouble. We'll talk in a moment, and I'll give you the answer. Right here on Pointing You Home on WMAL.
This is Pointing You Home on WMAL. Here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Hey, millennials are those who are currently between 22 years of age and 37 years of age, okay? So let me just tell you what they are saying about homeownership, okay? 53% of current millennial homeowners had paid for their down payment out of their own savings. 14% had their parents' help, and 15% regret buying the house that they own. Why? Biggest reason? Worried about making mortgage payments. Second reason? It's too small. Third, bought it too soon. Made a decision to just get something and then regretted it without thinking through what was involved. There's a lot of friction in buying and selling real estate. That is true. If you need to sell, it is not always easy. I have tried to sell a property that I own and I have been unsuccessful a couple of times. It is currently under contract and I'm grateful for that. I don't really believe at this point it's going to go to closing because of my previous experience, but I got to tell you, look, you can jump in, you can go through all this effort and have a home that you and the bank own, and then you and the bank own that house, and you are responsible to pay that mortgage off whether you can sell the house or not, right? What do you think are the most popular places to relocate to find affordable homes, Helen? Mm. Let's take like top three states for affordable homes.
That's a good quiz.
Okay. Yeah.
I would think in the Midwest, any of the states in the Midwest, Iowa, Kentucky. That's not Midwest, but Iowa, Kentucky, Kansas.
West Virginia is one of them.
Okay,
so there you go, West Virginia. And I would think West Virginia might be, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of hard to get to places in West Virginia because of the travel over the mountains and so on, but it is a fairly inexpensive place to buy. Guess what? Another one is Texas.
Yes.
And because Texas is just huge. They still got a lot of land. It is, it's expensive to live in certain cities, certain parts of Texas, but Texas has a lot. Washington State, also another one.
Yes.
Now, Seattle, of course, is an exception, but so much of Washington State is rural, it's farmland, and it's fairly inexpensive to live there.
When you were talking about the millennials, and I have some millennials in the family, and they're burdened with student loans,
mm-hmm.
and that certainly affects credit and their ability to buy, and just the whole mentality of being burdened with that mortgage at a young age, they just, no, that's for later. That's for when we have a family, et cetera, et cetera. Cost of living is very high around here.
Mm-hmm.
And young people getting their start are finding it very difficult to purchase a starter home around here.
True. 65% of millennials think that home ownership is a choice. It's not a necessity. So, and partly, look at the last 20 years of our existence. We've had inflation in food costs. We had inflation in oil costs, but that settled back down. So healthcare and food are the two costs that have gone up the most, and then housing. Because although interest rates are low, the cost of buying a house has gone up over time. So, but not really seeing this inflation, massive inflation that we saw in our generation back in the 70s, where we saw prices triple between 70 and 1980, and then double again between 85 and 90, and then double again and almost triple again between 2002 and 2007. We just haven't seen that. So if you haven't been a part of a massive upsurge in pricing, you don't believe that it's necessarily a good thing to secure yourself with the ownership of a home. So, but 46% of millennials are planning to buy a home in the next 4 years. So that bodes well.
That bodes well. And it's a wise move for millennials, because even if they buy a one-bedroom condo, they've invested in real estate and invested in their future.
And 3/4 of millennials currently cannot afford to buy a home, and they have less than half of them have less than $2,000 saved.
I believe it.
We wish our millennial buyers much success in saving so that you can buy the homes that Helen and I will be selling
sooner rather than later.
Helen, we've had some recent home sales that have gone very, very well, where prices have actually been executed at above market pricing. One in case, a house was listed for $975, sold for $990. One for $1,050,000, went for $1,075,000. One at $800,000, went for $840,000. We've seen strength in the overall economy of real estate locally, which is super exciting. This is the time of year. You've prepared some homes that you're getting ready to put on the market.
Right. One went on last couple weeks ago, and another's going on shortly. One of them is a split level in Springfield, and what's unusual is the square feet. It's over 2,400 square feet with a huge addition on it. You don't find split levels with 5 bedrooms and 3 full baths, not to mention a gorgeous, gorgeous stone patio. This is at 608 Jennings Lane in Springfield. And the other property is something that you would find in House Beautiful or HGTV. It's at 3245 Sismont Court in Lake Ridge. And when you see the pictures, you'll know what I'm talking about. You wouldn't imagine that anyone lives there.
Mm-hmm.
And the lot is private, but it's very accessible, surrounded by trees in the common area, not in the yard so that you have that fear of trees.
Mm-hmm.
A kitchen that is absolutely gorgeous. Everything about this house is beautiful. And this is listed for $520 and a fabulous neighborhood. So that's going to be exciting.
If you're listening and it's piqued your interest, take a look at our listings, Helen's and Terry's and my listings in Virginia at ericstewartgroup.com. You can also see some listings that have not come on the market yet in our coming soon section. Furthermore, if you're thinking about selling and you'd like to have Helen or Terry or myself come out, meet with you and tell you how to get your home ready to sell and how we will get you top dollar. Just as a reminder, so we do sell our homes for more than the other brokers who advertise on this station. It's a proven fact that our list-to-sell ratio is higher. So we sell houses for more money. And at the end of the day, as a homeowner, isn't that what you really want? So give us a call now at 800-900-9104 to schedule a free appointment for one of our team to come out and see you. That's 800-900-9104. We always encourage you to talk to a couple of brokers before you hire one. We just ask that we could be one of the two or more that you talk with. That's 800-900-9104 or go to ericstewartgroup.com. Helen, the Market Ready Guide. Tell me how your clients use the Market Ready Guide as they're getting ready to get their home on the market.
Oh, they all use it in different ways. I wish I could be a fly on the wall sometimes. Just like in any class or training of some sort, you will have people that will take every word in it and follow it just like a checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are others that may take a look at it and say, well, I'm never going to be able to do that. And fortunately, call for help and say, hey, how do I do this? There really, though, are no shoulds to this whole process.
Okay.
Back in my therapist days, I would say there are no shoulds, and it's even more true in the real estate market. The shoulds we hear are about neutralizing your home and taking down the personal pictures and all. And the reality is, when you've done this for a few years, you see different things, and it's more about the person that's selling their home than it is about checking off the boxes. I had a gentleman many years ago that we were putting his house on the market, and I was going through the house, and he opened what I thought was a closet, and it was a floor-to-ceiling Hindu prayer room.
What? Wow.
And it was gorgeous, and it was just filled, and mm-hmm. it's something that he used every day. And this was when the market was starting to tank back in the 2000s, and we got to talking about his prayer room, and he's saying he's praying to get his house sold, and then he said, "What's this St. Joseph that you bury? Do you have one of those too?" So that house.
For those who don't know what this has to do with real estate, St. Joseph is the patron saint of real estate, apparently, according to my Catholic friends. And so the story is that if you bury a St. Joseph statue upside down with him facing the curb, that he will somehow be blessed by that and bless your home sale.
And there are people that swear by this.
I know.
And two other pieces of that story. Usually I put St. Joseph on a mantle if I'm going to do it. But I did have one client that went back to get her. She moved out of town and called me and said, "Can you dig up St. Joseph?" And I couldn't find him. So.
Oh, dear. One of my clients used two of them, actually, and remarked when I felt very good after her home sale. And she said, "I know what sold my house."
And It wasn't Eric Stewart.
It wasn't Eric Stewart. It was my two St. Josephs. So, all right. Well, hey, look, I will sell houses all day long and be happy to have St. Joseph bless the sale of all of my listings. Well, it's coming to the end here of the Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home. Straight ahead is the Seniors Solutions Show, and Helen will join me again. We'll talk about real estate investments and getting older, aging parents, and real estate investments. So stay tuned for more. Straight ahead here on WMAL.
The Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.